Dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashantinilayam, the most happening place on the planet, and this indeed is one of the most refreshing seasons of Prashantinilayam, because in Prashantinilayam, in a manner of sorts, New Year begins not so much in January as much as in June, because this is the time new students join Bhagwan's institutions. Everyone has returned from their summer vacations, not only students, even all the ashram inmates and elders. The summer heat is beginning to cool down, and there is always a sense of making a new start, a new beginning, the sight of so many fresh and eager young faces does really enliven your spirits. The white army of Sai is here, wide-eyed, trying to grasp and assimilate, absorb and experience the new environment, the new routine, the new lifestyle, the new approach to life. And for some of them, it indeed is their long-cherished dreams which have become true. For some, it is a curious twist of destiny that they happen to land here, and they are constantly trying to figure out what this means to them and to their life and to their goals in life and so on. So different students are here from all over the country, trying to grasp, trying to absorb, and trying to enjoy and relish this experience of being called a Sai student. And for all the others, it is always a very, very rejuvenating feeling when you see so many new faces in Prashantinilayam, and all white and white. So it's definitely one of those novel periods in the calendar of Prashantinilayam, and this is more so because what are Prashanti festivals without the students? Every festival, right from Guru Purnima in June, July to Aradhana Mahotsavam day in April, every occasion acquires its flavor because of the students. If it is Christmas, boys sing carols. If it is Dasara, the students chant Vedam. If it is Ganesh Chaturthi, the boys do the fantastic chariots. If it is Krishna Janmashtami, it is the boys who bring the cows in procession to Mandir. If it is Shivaratri, boys do Akhanda Bhajans. And if it is birthday, it is these students who sing the songs that Swami liked the most. It is they who present a drama to mark the convocation of the university. Take any festival in Prashantinilayam and take students out of it, and you would find that there is a vacuum that cannot be filled. And if you reflect on this, Bhagwan has designed this in such a way, Bhagwan has planned it in a manner that students remain the fulcrum of all the celebrations in Prashantinilayam. Education for them is not just studying subjects in the classrooms. Swami wanted their education to be complete in every way, to be holistic, to be comprehensive, to be integrated. And so he made sure that the hostel remained a vital part of their learning process, and mandir activities seamlessly merged into their academic and non-academic life. And if you ponder on this a little more, and think what could be the goal of all these multifarious activities that the students are asked to get busy with all round the year, what comes to my mind is what Bhagwan said, maybe in 2009-2010, in the beginning of the academic year, Swami told the students and the teachers to focus only on three tenets: Daiva Preeti, Papa Bhiti, and Sanghaniti. Love for God, fear of sin, and morality in society. In this order, first comes love for God. And this instruction Swami emphatically gave in the final years of his earthly sojourn, almost telling us that this is what should be the focus of all our initiatives and endeavors. And today, when you see everything that the students do from this perspective, from this lens, it becomes clear that this in fact is what Bhagwan wants to instill slowly and silently but solidly in the life of every student through all these myriad functions and celebrations. Love for God is the foundation for the development of a sound character. for the blossoming of human personality, for man to achieve his potential, for man to find his destiny and find fulfillment in life, love for God is where all begins. And this is what Bhagwan subtly but powerfully instills all round the year into the hearts and minds of young students in the Sri Satya Sai educational institutions. In fact, for Swami, students cultivating love for God was more important than their so-called secular education. In fact, Swami never minced words when he talked about the greatness of Meera or Radha or Prahlada or Tyagaraja. All of them were uneducated from the worldly point of view, but what they taught humanity is something that man is still trying to fathom and emulate even centuries after they have left the physical realm. In fact, as I talk about Radha and Meera, a beautiful song comes to my mind.
Ik Radha, Ik Meera, Dono ne Shyam ko chaha, Antar kya Dono ki chaah mein bolo, Ik Prem Diwani, एक दर्शन दीवानी, एक प्रेम दीवानी, एक दर्शन दीवानी, एक राधा, एक मीरा, दोनों ने शाम को चाहा, अंतर क्या दोनों की चाह में बोलो, अंतर क्या एक प्रेम दीवानी एक दर्श दीवानी एक प्रेम दीवानी एक दर्श दीवानी मधुबन में ढूंढा मीरा ने मन में पाया राधा ने मधुबन में ढूंढा मीरा ने मन में पाया राधा जिसे खो बैठे वो गोविंद मीरा हाथ बिछाए एक रानी एक दासी दोनों हरि प्रेम की प्यासी अंतर क्या दोनों की प्रीत में बोलो अंतर क्या
प्रभु गिरी
कथानित श्रृंगार करे और मीरा बन गई जोगन एक मुरली एक पायल एक पगली एक घायल अंतर क्या दोनों की तृप्ति में बोलो अंतर क्या दोनों की तृप्ति में बोलो एक जीत न माने एक हार न माने एक जीत न माने एक हार न माने एक राधा एक मीरा दोनों ने श्याम को चाहा चाह में बोलो एक प्रेम दीवानी एक दर्श दीवानी एक प्रेम दीवानी एक दर्श दीवानी.
Isn't that song beautiful? If Radha was from the Dwapara Yuga, Prahlada from the Krita Yuga, and Mira from many centuries before in Kali Yuga, in the present time, in this century itself, right in front of our eyes, was Sai Kita, Bhagwan's beloved pet elephant, whose love for the Lord was simply unmatched. In the previous two episodes of Outside, Inside, Deep Inside, we have ruminated a great deal on her life, her devotion, and her mission. In fact, if you have missed any of these episodes, you can go to Thursday Live Archives and download and listen at your convenience. But what I could not add in these two previous episodes is the story of another person who has been associated with Sai Kita for more than two decades, looking after her, caring for her, being with her right through the very last moment of her life. Someone whose devotion to the Lord too is no less exalted and exceptional. Not many know about Mr. Pedda Reddy, the silent Sai devotee for whom Swami's word was and is everything in his life. Sometime in 1980, Swami told him to look after Sai Kita, and from that day till the very last moment of Sai Kita's time on earth, he never even came to Mandir to have Bhagwan's darshan. For him, this chance, this duty, this opportunity of serving Sai Kita was so important that he spent all his time and energy in this with full commitment. For 40 years he has not moved an inch beyond the Sai Kita shed in Prashantanilayam and never entered Sai Kulwanthal to sit for darshan. He saw the Lord only when Sai Kita saw the Lord. He was happy when Sai Kita was happy. He cried when Sai Kita suffered from pain. He was jubilant when Swami blessed Sai Kita and was sorrowful when Sai Kita was depressed if Swami did not give her enough attention one day. And he had no desire other than just fulfilling Bhagwan's word to the T. And today, even though Sai Kita is gone, he has no other desire. He leads an exemplary simple life in the ashram. His expenses are not more than rupees 50 per month. He cuts his hair himself, washes his clothes himself. And he says, I am so much at peace. There is so much of calmness within me. It is Bhagwan's blessing that I have no desires today. Swami has given me everything. I feel so fulfilled. If you spend 5 minutes with him, you are left inspired. And like him, dear listeners, there are so many such hidden diamonds in the Prashantanilayam ashram who are silent, but through their silence, like a rose, they simply exude so much of beautiful fragrance. And today, in this episode of Outside, Inside, Deep Inside, I want to focus on one other such beautiful soul, and his name is Mr. Satish Naik, the chief engineer of Bhagwan's ashram in Prashantanilayam. So who exactly is he? How long has been his association with Bhagwan and with Swami's mission, and in what capacity? What are those rose-like qualities in Him? And what is it that we need to emulate in our lives from this instrument of Bhagwan? So this is what we are going to discuss today in this last leg of Thursday Live from the studios of Radio Sai.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
So welcome to Outside Inside Deep Inside. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu, and today, as I just mentioned, we are going to have an episode of our series Inspired Lives, and it features Mr. Satish Naik. So let me play for you the first part of this special episode of Inspired Lives. Saram, dear listeners, and welcome to Inspired Lives, our series on Radio Sai, where we discuss about people who have made huge positive difference in the lives of so many. People who in some way or the other are our role models as we strive to practice Swami's teachings in our day-to-day practical lives. In the previous two episodes, we brought you uplifting snippets from the life and work of Dr. Narasimhan, the man who has spent the best part of his life serving selflessly in the rural areas of Andhra Pradesh, and continues to do so now in the capacity of being the director of Sri Sathya Sai Mobile Hospital Project, which is part of the medical care wing of the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust. And fortunately for us, there are so many like Dr. Narasimhan in the world today, people who have been silently and passionately working to experience the love of the divine through stern dedication and strong commitment to his mission and his values. And these are people who do not talk but always walk the talk. They love stretching themselves beyond their limits time and again to do God's work, but do it quietly, stoically and consistently. And Swami in his own ways does shower his unbounded grace on them. And one such Sai crusader is Mr. Satish Naik, the chief engineer of Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust, who also is the chief engineer of the Sathya Sai Ashram, Prashantinilam Ashram. Even though he's close to 85 now, he's as active as someone who is 45, looking after all the engineering and maintenance aspects of the Prashantinilam Ashram, as well as several Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust projects. Even though he graduated as an electrical engineer with distinction, being the second top scorer in Madras University in 1953, curiously, he had his first break as assistant mechanical engineer in Indian Railways in 1954, and over the next two decades, he rose in position, rank and responsibility until he became the deputy chief mechanical engineer of Southern and Southeastern Railways, Government of India. Later, he moved on to managerial positions and served as Divisional Railways Manager, Southern Railway. This is from 1974 to 1977. In 1977, the consultancy wing of Indian Railways, called the Rail India Technical and Economic Services, in short RITES, sent him to Ghana in Africa as a consultant to the company Diesel Locomotive Maintenance. Though this assignment in Ghana was meant for 3 years, he ended up staying on in Ghana, in this African country, for 9 years, and by the time he left in 1986, he was the acting chairman of the Board of Management, Ghana Railway Corporation. After this, interestingly, he moved on to Washington and served in the World Bank as a railway engineer for again close to a decade. Once he retired in 1996, he returned to the lotus feet of Bhagwan to participate now directly in his mission, and in fact was instrumental in the setting up of many projects, the first being the Sri Sathya Sai Gokulam Residential Complex in the Vrindavan Ashram in Bangalore, and then the Mammoth Sri Sathya Sai Institute of High Medical Sciences in Whitefield, Bhagwan Super Speciality Hospital, which was constructed magically in just 12 months. And later, Swami blessed him with a chance to build the Sai Kishan Kalyan Mandapam in the Vrindavan Ashram. He was also fortunate to participate in the Trai Vrindavan Extension Program. Bhagwan's residence was extended and modified, and Bhagwan blessed him with this unique opportunity. He moved to Prashantinilayam in 2006, and that was the time Swami entrusted him to construct the indoor stadium, which is again one of very few indoor stadiums in India when it comes to the facilities and the manner in which the stadium caters to sports enthusiasts. Perhaps there is hardly any university in India which can boast of such a well-equipped and well-maintained indoor stadium, and he was the man working behind the scenes to make it happen. Besides all this, he has been instrumental in the setting up of the sewage treatment plant in the Prashantinilayam Ashram, constructing additional residential quarters for the staff of both the super speciality hospitals, a host of other similar minor and major projects of the trust and the ashram. And even though he has seen more than 80 summers and winters, even till this day, his day is very busy and his advice, approval and direction is very much sought in the running of the ashram as far as the engineering and maintenance aspects are concerned. And what is most important is he never preaches but always practices. And by his sheer commitment to Swami's values, he is today an inspiration for so many young and old in the ashram and elsewhere, whoever has come in touch with him over all these years. And Hari Shankar and myself, the hosts of this program, Inspired Lives, are extremely grateful to Bhagwan for having made it possible for us to have this session with Satish Nayak sir today, so that we can draw lessons from his illustrious life and career and strive to implement them in our lives. So with great happiness, we welcome you, sir, to this program.
Just to add to what Vishu was saying, in fact, the proposal, we decided a few days ago that we should be having Mr. Satish Nayak on the program.
Yes.
And I was very glad to hear that, because this is something I've been looking forward to for quite some time. Because I have a colleague who works in the Whitefield Super Speciality Hospital, and I used to admire him for the meticulous way in which he used to go about his work, mm-hmm. very dedicated to his work and with great attention to detail. And then I expressed to him, you know, that I really admire your way of working. And he said, do you know from whom I have learnt this way of working? He said it was from Mr. Satish Nayak, because he had the privilege of working with sir at the time of the construction of the super speciality hospital. When they had to source, he was in charge of the sourcing the equipment for the hospital. And he had the opportunity to watch and learn from Mr. Satish Nayak.
Yes. So I think there are so many like this who have silently benefited by just watching you work. And probably you never know how many people's lives you have helped to discipline their lives and to dedicate their lives to Bhagwan's mission. That's why Hari Shankar and myself are really grateful to Bhagwan that you are here with us in the studios. Thank you so much, sir, for being with us for this program, Inspired Lives.
I would first like to thank Swami for giving me this opportunity to come on Radio Sai. All that you said, the credit goes to Swami. I have only been an instrument in this, and what little or whatever big I have done is entirely due to Swami's grace and His blessings. So I would take it as another example of Swami's helping everybody.
Absolutely. That is how committed, and that is the attitude of surrender that we should always have in our lives. So that is the first lesson that we learn as we begin. So please, before we get started, and you shared with us snippets from your life, sir, if you can briefly give our listeners an overview of this long career that you had spanning different continents, and how did it happen that, you know, you being an electrical engineer ended up first taking up a job which had to do with mechanical engineering in railways, and then how did it happen that you went to Africa and stayed on for 9 years, and then you had the chance to work for World Bank. So if you can give us a brief overview of the different milestones of your life, I think that will help listeners to know more about you, because, you know, all of us who are here in Prashantalam, we have seen you, but there are so many who do not know you, because you are someone who always works behind the scenes.
Behind the scenes, yes.
I was born in 1932.
Okay.
In Ernakulam. It was Cochin State those days, now
yes.
Kerala.
Pre-independence India.
Pre-independence India. And for the first 5 years of my life, I stayed with my grandparents.
Okay.
Thereafter, my schooling was entirely in Tamil Nadu. I had to go for study in about 7 schools during my schooling career, because my father was transferred from place to place.
Okay.
During my stay with my grandparents, I think certain fundamentals of life got ingrained in me. The other day I was reading an article where the psychologist says that all that a man learns, 95% is learnt in the first 5 or 6 years.
First 5 or 6 years.
So that set me thinking, and I was thinking what could have helped me in those 5 years. One thing that I will always remember is the way my grandmother brought me up.
Mm-hmm.
She was a very pious lady, devout lady, and praying to Shiva, Krishna, all the gods of the Hindu pantheon. My grandfather, on the other hand, would not like to do anything with the idols and images. He was one of the earliest people in our community to go abroad to London to study medicine.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And when he came back, he almost got excommunicated.
Oh, in those days, if you leave the country, then the community excommunicates you.
You are a Brahmin and you could not do your Sandhya Vandanam over the water.
Oh, right. Beyond the seas.
Beyond the seas.
Oh, the Sandhya Vandanam is the daily ritual that every Brahmin must do.
Must do. But when he came back and the Maharaja of Cochin made him the chief medical officer, all this thing disappeared and he became popular.
He got all the credibility.
He got all the credibility. But he used to say that, I don't care for any gods or images. My only god is truth.
Wow.
And I will live for truth. And he walked the talk. Throughout my schooling, as I told you, we had to go to various schools. And most of the schools, I did well. And sometimes for 1 year, I had to go to 3 schools.
So even though your academics are being disrupted, but still you were all the time doing very well in your studies.
Even during those days, probably because of the grandmother's influence, I used to pray mentally. To pray for help. And it was never refused. You did well when I came to my SSLC.
That is higher secondary school?
Secondary school.
Matriculation.
Leaving certificate. Before joining college.
College. Yeah.
There I ended up with almost record marks.
Okay.
And got into the college also. And then after intermediate, I got into the engineering college at Anantapur.
Anantapur. So that was affiliated to which university?
Madras University. In those days.
Because it was part of the Madras state at that time. The state of Andhra Pradesh had not yet been formed.
Andhra Pradesh was formed afterwards, 1954 or 55.
Yes.
After finishing my engineering degree in electrical, when I wanted to appear for the All India Railway Engineering Services examination, I found I was underage for all the branches excepting mechanical.
Okay.
And since I was studying in the Institute of Science, trying to do a postgraduate course.
The Indian Institute of Science
in
Bangalore.
Bangalore.
One of the premier institutions in India, again, when it comes to
science. I had the facility of a wonderful library.
Okay.
So, every evening, night, I could have time to study something of mechanical engineering, and finally I wrote the exam. I was very surprised when I was called for the interview.
Okay. So you studied all about mechanical engineering in just about 6 months?
About 6 months.
This is a syllabus which is normally covered in 4 years or 3 years.
No, it's about 2 years, I can
right.
say.
Okay. The core subjects.
Then I had gone to Bombay for training, again in the electric grid, Bombay Electric Grid.
Mm-hmm.
And one fine morning in 1954, February, June or so, my uncle called me. "Have you seen in the newspaper today?" I said, "No, anything special?" He said, "No, your engineering services exam results have come." So I said, "So what?" I didn't expect to be anywhere near that and in the list, because I thought this would be practice and next year I would go in for the real exam.
Which would be for electrical engineering?
For electrical engineering.
Right.
But my uncle told me that I had stood first in India.
You stood first? Oh my God.
All India.
And that way you are phenomenal.
And the number of people selected that year for service was 3.
I see.
This is absolutely...
a very exclusive club actually.
Really? I mean, you study electrical engineering for 4 years, then you go through some books of mechanical engineering for 3-4 months, and then you top the exam.
No, we had the basics in the college of all branches.
True, but still, I mean, there are students who have studied mechanical engineering for all their student engineering life.
So, all these things reinforced my strong conviction that there is some unseen hand behind anything good that happens in this world.
So, when the result came, you did not think that it was because of your effort?
No. I could not have.
Uh-huh.
Because reading up 4-5 subjects, I read up all right. I wrote something, but in the interview also I did reasonably well, but I didn't expect to get in at all.
Mm-hmm. And you stood first.
So this is, some unseen hand is there. So all the time whenever these things happened, anything good happened, I used to think there is this unseen hand, I used to thank the unseen hand.
So it was not any particular form of God, but you just believed in a power.
I believed in a power, and I found it easy to pray to one of the Hindu gods.
Okay. But in your these 4 years of stay at Anantapur, at no point of time did you ever hear of Bhagwan, because I'm thinking this is the 1940s and the very enticing proximity. That
is my biggest loss.
No one told you about
it. No one told me about it. And after I left the college, Swami came and stayed in the principal's house.
Oh.
But I had left the college.
Okay.
So at what point of time did you really hear about Bhagwan? Like through this, during this student life, or you, of course, when you were here, you could not. But at some point of time, Bhagwan entered your life. Like
when I was in Kharagpur, working in the railways.
Right.
One of my colleagues was a Sai devotee. He used to tell me about Swami, and in his house he had a big picture of Swami. But somehow I didn't really latch on to the possibilities of this. Then I got posted in Chennai, Madras, in 69.
Okay.
70, 71 we kept on hearing about Swami, what he does and all that. And 4 things happened in a period of 2 to 3 months. Which really brought me to Swami. One, I read Howard Moffat's Man of Miracles.
Okay.
Okay, that's the foundation, earthwork and foundation.
Yes.
Then, once Swami came to Abbotsbury.
Abbotsbury,
Chennai. My railway quarters was just behind Abbotsbury, across the compound wall. Anyway, you could walk across. There was a big crowd. We were somewhere at the back. But something really told me that this is something out of the ordinary.
Because Abbotsbury was where Swami used to give darshan earlier. Like presently, we have the Sundaram, which is the main temple for
Abbotsbury
Bhagwan.
Was the earlier.
So Abbotsbury was the center earlier.
It belonged to Swami, he sold it later.
Right, yes.
So that was the second thing. The third thing, there was one very senior devotee, Venkatamani. Swami used to come to his house. So Venkatamani is called us, our family, big family, 3-4 families, extended family. Come today, Swami will come. So we went there. I sat there on the ground. Swami came, sat on the throne, chair on the throne. Yes. And suddenly looked at me and said, come and sit next to me.
Okay.
Now, I didn't have the guts to do that. I said, Swami, I'll continue to sit here. I sat there, and after everything was over, when I was going out, I touched his feet and he patted my back. Then the fourth thing was which really got me into the stream. There was one family who, and their daughter was my daughter's classmate.
Mm-hmm.
And my daughter used to come home and say, this is happening in their house, that is happening, Vibhuti is coming, Chandan is coming, this is coming, and letters are coming, letters are going, so many things. I used to keep on listening to it, but nothing was happening. My wife had already got into Sai's service.
Mm-hmm. Oh, already got into Sai's service?
Service means she was...
going to the Samitis and all.
Samitis and bhajans and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So, one day she said, you come, let us go. I went there. Then I met this family. They were so good to anybody who came there. Whether it was a servant, whether it was a visitor, whether it was a VIP, whether it was a dog.
Mm.
So kind, so good, and always smiling and happy. Then it struck me, if the disciple could be so good, what would the guru be?
Wow.
So this must be something much more than this. I must do it. Then I started going for bhajans.
So what really attracted you was their way of being after they have met Bhagwan.
After they have met Bhagwan.
Yeah, the kind of life that they were leading, how they were with people.
Yes.
Right.
And their children, if they sleep on their birthday, when they get up on their birthday, their forehead will be covered with vibhuti.
Oh.
And for your information, that... young boy there, who was a boy at that time, today is working in Super Hospital, Bangalore.
Oh, I see.
Okay. Okay. Interesting.
Shirale.
Right. Oh, Mr. Shirale.
Okay. Okay.
He's the administrative officer.
He's the administrative officer of the Super Specialty Hospital.
So that was, they were the people who really got us into the Swami stream. Then once I had gone to Bangalore, on duty, I had gone alone, my wife was not there. And one of the senior devotees asked me, why don't you come with me? I'm going to... it was not Traya Vrindavan at those days. I'm going to Whitefield Swami's residence. So I went with him. So I could go in because I was tagged on to him.
Okay.
And then Swami spoke to all of them. Then he called me. And he come, he said. So I followed him. There was a small enclosure with curtains. I went inside. And I was standing with hands folded. Suddenly, he just embraced me and from top to bottom moved his hands. From my shoulders to my feet. Like that.
Oh my God. He's almost like he's blessing every inch of your body.
Every inch of my body. And what struck me was, what I felt was, my mother was doing this to me. Because sometimes my mother used to bless me like that.
Oh.
And her hands were soft.
Right.
And small fingers. All this I felt. So I said, here is my mother, come back again. She had passed away by that time. And he asked me, what do you want? Now, I didn't know anything about, much about Swami. Like a silly fellow, I said, my father is having some shoulder pain, please cure him, Swami. He did that, no doubt.
Okay. So this must have been a very, very exceptional experience for you. I mean, this is the first time you're going very close to Bhagwan and he's not even asking your name, he's not speaking to you about anything, but he just gives you that hug and it's almost as if he's known you for years.
That's the feeling I got. Then I became more or less confirmed a devotee. And used to attend bhajans and things like that. And I was working in the railways at that time. And we were having a tough time with some meter gauge locomotives, also broad gauge locomotives, with the locomotive failures.
Mm-hmm.
Left and right, every day there would be a report. So-and-so express train, locomotive failed, 4 hours lost. So-and-so goods train, locomotive failed, 10 hours lost.
Right. Oh.
Like this. And we just didn't know what to do. We were doing, maintaining them by the book, what I mean, told to us.
Mm-hmm.
And we had locomotive sheds in Hee Road, Guntakal and Guti.
Okay.
All the three we were having this problem.
Mm-hmm.
One night I had a dream where Swami comes into Guntakal shed tool room.
Uh-huh.
All the tools are kept on the wall. He goes to a number of tools, mentions the name, and I say, he says, I bless this tool. I bless this tool. Like he says, I bless this power wrench. I bless this micrometer. I bless this. I bless, mentioning the technical names of all these things.
Mm. In the dream.
In the dream. And after the dream, he just went away after the dream, in the dream. And from that day, the fortunes of our sheds improved.
Mm-hmm.
Slowly, we were down in the doldrums, out in the digs. Slowly it improved, and in about 1.5 years, we were given the shield for being the best shed in India.
Best shed in India.
Oh, what a turnaround. Wow. From.
And we didn't do much, but he helped us to find out the solution also.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That was a change of lubricating oil and all that.
Well, this is the first time you experience Bhagwan helping you in your professional work.
Professional work.
I mean, he's answering to your prayers.
Yeah, but also, as sir was mentioning, that at every point of time in his life, he had felt the unseen hand.
Yes.
But I think the unseen hand was now stepping forward and making itself
known. Yes, the unseen hand has become seen.
Yes.
That's what it is. So, all these things made me feel that I should do something in return.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, material things one cannot do and you won't expect it either.
Yes.
And sitting and praying is not going to help. So the only thing you could do is to work as hard as possible in whatever job he gives you.
Be sincere.
Be sincere. Think of grandfather's truth.
Yes.
And grandmother's prayer.
Sir, you just mentioned something very interesting. You said in whatever work he gives you. So by that, you're not really distinguishing between the opportunities you get for his service at Prashantilayam or, you know, in his organization.
You see, in the very first year of engineering college, I made a mail order for one small Bhagavad Gita, Animescence Bhagavad Gita, small book with translation. I was too small to understand the spiritual portion of it and all that, but I just read through it. One sloka impressed me very much.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually used to keep that under the glass in my office.
Mm-hmm.
It's not here now, but I used to keep it. And that is that, karman neva adhikaraste.
Yes. Mahafaleshu kadachana.
So, you work, then the result will come by itself.
Right.
Work with no expectation on
the... No expectation of personal result or even the product.
Right.
Yes.
Product will be looked after by the unseen or seen hand.
Yes.
So, throughout it has been like this.
You work with a spirit of dedication, absolute dedication, and leave the results to the Lord.
That way you will be happy. Even if you get kicked about or thrown about, you feel that that's also Swami's doing.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And you felt that the responsibility that you are given in the office, that is also God's work you felt. You didn't feel that God's work means taking a Sai service project.
Not necessarily.
That is really very interesting, because many times people make this distinction between, you know, they feel I'm not doing enough service activities and I'm not able to give time to Swami's work, and they start distinguishing between the work that they do in the organization as Swami's work and the work that they do in the office as non-Swami work.
Mm.
What has been your experience and what is your take? Because you are bringing out this perspective that you never made that distinction.
You see, the career itself has been given by Swami, as I told you.
Right.
Yes.
So everything that comes in the career is what Swami has given you.
Yes.
To do.
Correct.
So it's not that the general manager has given it to you.
Oh.
Wow.
Okay.
So you always had that perspective that the job is given by Swami.
Then Swami is behind.
Yes.
This particular thing.
Yes. Yes. I mean, in an earthly plane, the manager would have given you the job, but it is ultimately, it is that power which has given you that job. Yes. And you report always to that power.
And it is also a great insight that, in the sense that whatever skills, whatever talents, whatever knowledge we have, whatever we gain, is something that is given by God.
Yeah.
And as sir said, the only way you can repay this kind of gratitude to God is to use that in service.
Like, yes.
No matter, it may be a job that you are in, but you can always regard that as a service to society or as a service to God.
If you are sincere in that job, then you are repaying it. And the best way to offer gratitude for what you have got is to do that work, be it in office, be it anywhere,
yes,
sincerely.
Right.
But that attitude will come only when we live with that feeling that whatever we have got, it is, we have got it from Bhagwan only. Yes. It is He who has given us.
Well, if He had not given it, you would be nowhere.
Correct.
Absolutely.
What would you be doing?
That's correct. Correct.
So, this was the work I'd do then. About 23 years I worked on the Indian Railways.
Yes.
In various capacities, as you said.
Hmm.
And then the Railway Board sent a message to me whether I would like to go to Ghana on consultancy job. I didn't know what to do. Whether it would be good for me or bad for me, I don't know.
Hmm.
So, it told me must take Swami's permission. So, I sent a telegram and I got a reply through some means that Swami has blessed my going.
Okay.
And the date for departure from Delhi was fixed on May 23rd.
Mm-hmm. 1973-74?
1977. 77,
okay.
And we went to Bangalore on May 17th. And fortunately, the same devotee who used to take me to Swami was there.
Okay.
He took us, whole family, and Swami was sitting there, and he introduced this, and a devotee introduced me and said, this is a railway engineer, Satish Naik, he wants to go to Ghana. He is going to Ghana. So Swami said, oh, Ghana, Ghana is my country. Ghanaians are my people.
Ghana is my country. Ghanaians are my people. That is such beautiful
words. Let him
words.
Go, tell him to go.
Wow.
And he blessed all of us. Then my wife was thinking in her mind, both my children were in their upper teens.
Okay.
And we had to leave them behind and we have to go, what to do and all that. So she was wondering what to do now. If we go there, what happens? Swami answered the question. He said, you don't worry, I'll be there with you, I'll be there with them.
So you're leaving them behind in India and...
Leaving behind in India.
And Swami gave you the assurance that He would take care of them even while you were away.
Even while I was away.
Okay.
Which He did. Mm. And there were so many dangers in life at that age.
Mm, yeah.
I know.
And they got through without any scars.
Right.
And then my wife was thinking in her mind, now we have to get them married.
Mm.
How to get them married if we go there and there's nobody here and what's going to happen? And Swami said, oh, you're thinking of marriage, is it?
Oh. In the interview room, immediately he's responding.
Immediately. Let them study.
So, none of these prayers were really voiced to Bhagwan. It's like as if he's picking up the questions from
your
mind.
Okay. So, he said, let them study. These three words had such a powerful effect.
Mm-hmm.
See, both my girls were doing well in class. Yeah. Well means always within the first eight single digit ranks.
Right. Okay.
3, 4, 5, 3, 4, 5. Both were doing chemistry, biochemistry and all. And both ultimately got postgraduate master's degrees also.
Hmm.
And in master's degree, and in the, all the exams after Swami said, let them study, they were never below the first rank.
Wow.
And both of them got university gold medals.
Fantastic.
Three words of Swami's, let them study.
Yes.
And he saw to it that what he said was done excellently.
Fantastic.
And he said, I will take care.
I will take care. Then the younger girl, of course, got a PhD from IIT Chennai, but never worked in it. She's gone.
Right.
Then couple of incidents on my way to Ghana or in Ghana.
Yeah, sure.
May be interesting.
Yes, sir.
May 23rd, we left Delhi, and our flight was to Rome overnight. Spend the day in Rome and catch the evening flight to Ghana.
Yes.
We were in a group of 13 people from Indian Railways.
Oh, that's the entire team?
Entire team.
From
consultancy team. One for civil, one for mechanical, like that. So, when we landed in Rome, I went round to pick up my baggage. Baggage was not to be found. It had not come.
Oh.
And I was very, very... shocked because I had kept all my papers, technical papers needed for the consultancy in that bag.
Right.
And that was lost. And of course, clothes, other things would have been lost. And we went to the hotel. All my colleagues wanted to see Rome. They went round in a tourist bus. Obviously, I couldn't do it. I was feeling very sorry, sad. And I sat down and I was asking Swami, he said, you will look after me. And the very first stage I'm going, my baggage is lost.
Even before you have reached Africa?
Even before you have reached Africa.
So the test had already begun.
The test had already begun. Swami, what is this? Please help me. That's what I was praying. Then in the evening we went to the airport. I finished checking in a jiffy because I had no baggage. Then I had to just sit around or loiter there till they were called in. The departure was on the first floor and arrivals were on the ground floor. So I just walked around, went to the ground floor, went around to the departure areas, totally deserted. There was nobody there. And all carousels were stationary. On one carousel, I saw my baggage standing there.
Oh.
Safe, unbroken, nothing. And in the baggage ticket showed it had gone to London and come back.
Interesting.
So I picked it up. And to come up to the first floor, instead of carrying it by the stairs, I took the escalator.
Right.
When coming up the escalator, which is on the edge of the parapet, when I looked out, I saw a huge big neon sign, SAI.
Oh, absolutely no doubt again as to who was behind it.
And below that it was written in Italian, Società Assurance Industrial Assurance Society.
Okay. Swami is blessing you, giving you assurance in wholesale.
In wholesale. So that was a good thing. And then I went on and started doing work in Ghana. And we had two occasions where our car had accidents. One occasion where the car overturned, one occasion where we had a collision.
Oh, I see.
And in both of these, my wife and I were fully safe. Very minor scratches. That's all, nothing more than that. And it was only Swami who could have saved us from those two things.
How was it working in Ghana, working in that African country in the 70s? What were the challenges there?
You see, one good thing. In my opinion, the Ghanaians are very, very good people. Heart of hearts are very good. Never impolite.
I see.
Never arrogant. Humble and wanting to learn.
Okay.
But they had been trained by the Westerners in a different way.
Right.
I don't want to mention what, but they needed a lot of technical assistance because all the main posts were held by the foreigners. When they left the country, they all left.
Okay, so there was a vacuum here.
There was a vacuum, so we had to fill it in. And we continued to work. And during my period there, I witnessed two or three coups.
Oh.
Military coups.
So,
very eventful stay at Ghana.
Yes.
So, in the first coup, when it occurred, my two children had come to Ghana, just on a visit. And we had planned that after 10 or 15 days, I'll take my leave, two-yearly leave, and we'll all go to London, and then see some European capitals, and then come back to India.
A vacation for the kids.
Vacation for the kids. Of course, not a very luxury vacation. We all stayed in these lodgings.
Okay.
What in French they call pension. That's where we stayed. But because of the coup, the airport was closed. That's what happened. Borders, airports, everything is closed when the coup comes. And it will be opened only when the new government stabilizes. So we didn't know what to do. Children had to come back to class. Back to India. And we were very keen to show them something also. Because we stayed apart for two full years.
Yes.
And there was no petrol available to move around. And the airport was in Accra. I was living in Takoradi.
That is how many kilometers?
140 miles.
Miles.
Somehow we managed to get a railway car, scrounged some petrol, just enough to take us to Accra. We went there. And on two or three places, we were stopped by military people who showed guns and checked everything and all that. Fortunately, we didn't have anything to hide. Reached Accra and went into the guest house, waiting for the airport to open. So we stayed there 2 days. Then the airport, there was no sign. But then one evening we got a message, tomorrow the airport is opening. Then he said, good, we have to go there. Now, how to go there? Because we don't have petrol, we have a car. Then I went to the road and started thumbing rides.
Right.
Very few cars on the road, and nobody would stop. Then one luxury car came, a nice big one, and that man slowed down and stopped, a driver you could see. He asked me, why are you standing on the road? It's dangerous. Then I told him, we have to go to the airport, what can we do? He said, I can give you a lift, but I can't take you up to the airport. Close to that, I'll take you.
So was it the car of some industrialist or somebody?
He said it was the car of one of the ministers, new ministers.
Oh, okay.
They used to call them secretaries. And
the driver was very kind.
He picked up our baggage, loaded it. He took us there and left us about half a kilometer from the airport. We got down. And I gave him some money. I didn't ask for more or anything, and he went away. We thanked him and went into the airport, bristling with military people.
The airport?
Airport. I want to see whether any fugitives were running away or something.
Absolutely.
Anyway, they checked all our baggage, this thing, and finally got into the flight. And as we were flying over Paris, coming into London, the pilot made an announcement that somebody had tried a counter coup.
Oh.
And as a result, the airport is closed again.
Oh my God. After your flight left, the airport was closed.
Airport was closed within an hour or so.
I see.
And it was opened after 10 days or so.
Oh my God, what a narrow escape.
In 15 days, there was a slot for just one flight.
And you happened to be in that.
We happened to be in that.
Wow.
So, another instance of the unseen hand.
When you think about all these things, you cannot just brush it aside as coincidence or something like that.
It cannot be. How can
because I'm just thinking of that, remembering Swami's assurance that he would take care of the children. So the people who would have been impacted most would have been those two kids.
Yes.
Who were looking forward to that kind of
and holiday. Now Swami had blessed the parents and the children.
So and all are together.
Work.
Then on one occasion, a second coup took place. When this military officer who did the coup, he said, last time I did a coup and I gave it back to civil officer, he's again become corrupt, so taken over. I'm going to run for an extended period. And naturally, when you work, you have to tread on some people's toes. For example, the Ghana Railway Corporation was buying spare parts through a middleman. I cut it out and started buying from the manufacturer.
But just before you proceed, now you are working for the Ghana Railway Corporation.
Ghana Railway Corporation.
So initially you were working actually as a consultant, right? You went as a consultant of Indian Railways.
Indian Railways for Ghana Railway Corporation.
Yes.
Attached to Ghana Railway Corporation.
Yes. But now you're working for Ghana Railway.
For Ghana Railway, as chief mechanical engineer. They gave me a post there.
Okay. So you moved after 3 years of working as a consultant for Indian Railways.
I continued to be in Indian Railways books, but working for them, which was agreed to.
Okay.
Along with the other team members? The other team members also got to stay back or?
Other team members, not all.
Right.
Only about two or three stayed back, not all. Then the people whose feet have been trod upon, they normally write anonymous letters and all that. So many letters went to the head of state, this man who did the coup. And I was wondering what is going to happen. I knew that some letters were going and all that.
Some allegations against
him. Allegations and all. So one day I was called to the ministry. I went to the ministry. There's a small reception room. I was sitting there. One very tough-looking, tough Ghanaian, bulging muscles, shining skin, military dress, very smart. Then I came to know later on, he was one of the commandos trained in Israel.
Oh. Wow.
So he came and took out his pistol and put it on the table.
Oh my God, before he opened his mouth.
Before he opened his mouth. Now, Mr. Nayak, let's talk. That means warning me not to tell a lie.
Yes,
right.
But I wouldn't have told a lie in any case.
Yes.
So then he said, read this, and gave me a letter, a page full of allegations. What do you have to say?
So what were the principal allegations?
That I am buying things from India,
mm-hmm.
ignoring other countries,
mm-hmm.
uh-huh. because you are an Indian.
Mm-hmm.
So I told him that, look here, none of these things is true. But if you want proof, you must give me time.
Mm.
I can write down and give you a detailed report.
Right.
He said, yes, that's right. You can go back now. I'll come back exactly after 1 week. Come back with your report. I came back. All this, most of it that was written there was more of a personal nature than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
This Indian purchases, out of $42 million for the project, Indian purchases were worth $110,000.
$100,000?
That's all. That
minuscule. Compared
so all this was, we put down all proof and everything, handed this over. He just glanced through it and said, I'll show it to the head of state and let you know. So, and then you stay in Ghana, come back after 2 days. Stay in Accra and come back after 2 days. I stayed there. After 2 days, I went back. And then he said, he came in again and said, Mr. Nayak, you're in luck.
Okay.
I said, what's it? He said, I've shown it to the head of state.
Mm-hmm.
He fully accepts your explanation. And he wants you to take personal charge of the whole project.
Wow.
From now on, you can run the project as you like, and anybody coming in the way, tell me, I will tell the head of state.
Wow. Full assurance.
I didn't have to complain against anybody, fortunately.
But what was your state of mind in that intervening period? I cannot even imagine being in that place.
It was difficult. Yeah. Once you pray, then you become a little more calm.
Uh-huh. You always believed in that power to help you.
He's got to help. That sort of thing. Anyway, after that we could move on this. And one more thing I wanted to just mention.
Sure.
About the conditions there. Because of 7 years continuous drought, there was a major famine. And no food, nothing was available. And their main export was cocoa.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And because the farmers were neglected, cocoa farms died out.
Due to all these numerous coups that were taking place?
Not only coups, corruption.
Right.
Nothing else at that time. And their exports came down. They had no foreign exchange. Most of the food they had to buy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So they could not import food, no money. Couldn't grow much because of famine. And it was a very, very difficult time for them. And the workers couldn't work. You could see they were tired. You couldn't work.
This was which year when the famine struck?
This would have been 81, 82 or 83, in between that. I was praying to Swami to give some idea to how to help the workers to work. So somehow he put me in touch with the World Food Program.
Mm.
It's a United Nations body. They have got a food for work program where if any major project is going on in a famine-stricken country, they would give food in place of salary.
Okay.
Part of the salary.
Right.
Because salary couldn't fetch anything in any case.
Yes.
So with great difficulty, after about 6 to 8 months of running around from embassy to embassy to United Nations office and chasing and explaining this thing and explaining the benefit of doing the project, how the country can come up, they all agreed that this should be given. And every month, when the people got their salary, along with the salary, they got one bag of wheat, one bottle of cooking oil, some sugar, some tinned fish, and milk, and these five things. The people, the boys, the men were really happy.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see an immediate upturn in productivity.
About how many people are we talking about, sir? Like how many workers?
We had about 15,000.
Oh,
my
Can
God.
You imagine the difference that made, really?
My God.
We started the project with 15,000,
mm-hmm.
but true to World Bank traditions, we ended it with 11,000. because they don't like keeping too many people. And the same work could be done by 11,000.
Right.
But at that time, you were able to, I mean, alleviate the hunger. 15,000 people, and that is such a humongous service, actually.
And the men were really happy, and you could see gratitude in them to work. They wanted to work.
Mm.
And it was quite an effort for you, right, to make that happen, like 6 months of
persistence. Effort and very, very concentrated prayers to Swami and Annapurna.
Mata Annapurna.
They're the only two things that helped.
But in this, were you joined by the other, members of the government or the office where you used to work? Like?
I was working as chief mechanical engineer and acting as GM also at that time.
General manager.
So, I had to do all the running around.
Okay.
Yes.
And if the Ghanaians themselves went to the embassies and all, they were not really entertained.
Right. Okay.
But I had diplomatic immunity and all that, so I could go and meet all these people. Talk to them and get it done. That helped a lot. But again, there is some unseen hand behind all this.
Yes.
Very soon the port workers launched a project and they also got it. That is another 8,000 people. So many people benefited as a result of it. But it was for 2 to 3 years only.
Okay.
By which time the normal
conditions,
near normal conditions were established. So these are the highlights.
Yes.
Of my stay there.
Yes, Hari was saying it was a very eventful stay. I think every 6 months, 1 year, you had something or the other coming up.
But all the time, Swami also making his presence known in so many different ways.
I mean, constantly relying on Swami's prayer to bail you out.
And he was saying also, like, how Swami had said that the people of Ghana are like my people. And
this one, I'll tell you how he proved it. I had gone to Washington for the World Bank interview in October 86.
Okay.
I came back and my wife had come from Takoradi to Accra to meet me. She met me and we spent the night in the guest house. In the night when I was sleeping, I got a dream of Swami coming and talking. What he said, I don't remember. I didn't remember that day, I don't remember today. But something he said. The next day we were going back to Takoradi by car. There it is driving on the right.
Okay.
I was sitting next to the driver. My wife was sitting behind the driver. And we were going along a 2-lane road, one up, one down. Good quality of road, but only one lane up and one lane down. And naturally you have to go in a stream, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 cars in a line, till you get a chance to overtake. And it was on a curve. And another stream of cars were coming in the opposite direction. We were going this way. Suddenly we found that one truck had overtaken those cars and was coming straight at us.
Oh.
Our driver, he saved our life. Suddenly swerved to the right, left the road, and we fell into a ditch about 10 feet deep.
Oh.
So that averted a head-on collision.
That averted a head-on collision, and fortunately there were a lot of shrubs there. They cushioned the fall.
Right.
The only one or two glasses were broken. And we got out of the car and took some time to get over the shock, checked all our bodies whether anything is broken. Then we came up onto the road now to decide how to get back.
Right.
We came up onto the road. We found a lot of villagers coming and they showed a sign of asking for something. And Ghanaians normally ask for something. They say, please, the word is Mpocho. Mpocho, and they're showing this sign. So we're wondering, what is this? What are these people asking us at this time? My thoughts went on to what happens in India or something. People come asking for money and all.
Yes.
Are these people going to ask us for money when we are in trouble? We had an accident.
Yes.
Then they came nearer. They said, please, please, as soon as you go back home, go straight to the hospital, get checked up. We beg you to do it.
What generosity.
My God.
Then at that time we realized, when Swami said, Ghana is my country and Ghanaians are my people.
Wow. I mean, that's so touching.
Because I think the people, Swami would always say, he's attracted by the simplicity of or generosity of a person's heart. More than the, exterior, like no matter how rich, how wealthy they are. But this
And Swami is someone who is actually physically gone to Africa.
He has been.
He's physically.
I think around the same time, no?
Yeah. 68.
Late 60s. Yeah, 68.
Yeah,
68. Much earlier.
Much earlier, yeah. So this was the first part of our conversation with Mr. Satish Naik, the chief engineer of Sri Satya Sai Central Trust as well as the Prashanthi Nilayam Ashram. In the next part, coming up next Thursday at this hour, we will go into the second part of this conversation wherein he goes on to share about his experiences in the World Bank and then his life's dream of working directly for Bhagwan's mission coming true and how he was blessed to lead so many extremely important construction projects of the Sai mission like the Sri Satya Sai Institute of High Medical Sciences, Whitefield, Bhagwan Super Speciality Hospital in Bangalore, the indoor stadium, the expansion of Bhagwan's residence in Vrindavan, Trai Vrindavan and so on. And there are plenty of very salient and powerful lessons from his life. When I look at him, he always seems to me as an example of what faith is, what devotion in action is, what discipline and dedication is. And when we see such people, we cannot but think of the one who made such people. And they inspired us to no end to lead such lives, to transform our lives, to fashion our lives in this most elevating way. It is not so much a great achievement if we acquire the vision of the Lord. I feel what is even greater is when others envision God when they see us. Yes, the greater achievement than securing the vision of the Lord is to be such a person that when others see you, they envision God. Well, this is something to ponder on. So I leave you with this on this lovely Thursday, which has indeed been a very fulfilling day for all of us in the studios, like every Thursday is when we go live from morning till evening. Thank you so much for being with us all the while and all these years. Feel free to send us your feedback. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu. On behalf of all of us at Radio Sai, I place my most loving and grateful salutations at Bhagwan's lotus feet for this opportunity of sharing His love, His message and His glory. Thank you so much. And finally, a sweet goodbye and loving Sai Ram from Prashanthi Nilayam.